Bill Flores joins us from D.C. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
I guess the big story is the Congressional Budget Office, and people should be reminded, this is nonpartisan, has put out a report, and there's good news for both sides, but I'd like to get your feeling on the information that the CBO released yesterday.
Well, there's a lot of bad news in it, and most of it is resulting from the implementation of Obamacare, or the pending implementation of Obamacare. What the CBO found is our economic growth is going to be lower than what their last forecast said. In particular, the labor force participation rate is abysmal. I mean, it's just terrible. We're going to be down in a neighborhood of some European countries that have, you know, broader socialist type systems to support their people. The big number that came out was that the equivalent of 2.3 million folks were going to be out of the labor force. Now that doesn't mean that 2.3 million people are going to quit working, but it means that if you take the number of hours of reduced output and divide it by the number of worker or divided by work week, it's in an annual year. It's equivalent to 2.3 million people dropping out of the workforce. So it's pretty ugly. We're going to have a hearing on this today, and the director of the CBO, Doug Elmendorf, is going to come talk to the Budget Committee about how they develop their findings and what it means for America, and hopefully we can get him to do it in lay terms.
Some questions that you're going to ask him.
Well, one of the things I want to ask him is, what happens to the economy if this, you know, let's assume we get this 2.3 million equivalent persons dropping out of the workforce. Does that set up some sort of an economic death spiral? Because at some point you get to where you can make our economy, instead of being a first world economy, it could be a third world economy if the federal government begins to take certain actions to try to offset the decline. And in other words, we try to set up a broader, when I say we, the government would try to set up a broader social safety net system, which means its deficits go higher, which has a compounding adverse impact on employment. And so you just get in these spirals where instead of being having economic growth, you have economic decline. And that's one of the concerns I have. The other question I'll ask him is, one of the things that wasn't said in this report is that people will have less of an incentive. The job creators are going to have less of an incentive to hire and to continue to invest in their businesses, because that business investment goes down. And so the question you have to ask yourself is, would those job creators decide to look at other countries to set up their operations, and could you get in a situation where your tax base disappears? And so that's another question I intend to ask him. Okay. You know, you see it here within the United States. When California raises taxes and puts in a heavy regulatory regime, well, those employers, those job creators, move to Texas. And my question is, could there be a situation where they just said, okay, I'm moving out of the country altogether? Mm-hmm. We see corporations do it, but what about individuals?
Bill Flores joining us this morning. And there are people listening here this morning who I know don't know that the numbers would be that great, because employment's pretty good here at Bryan College Station. But if you use the term job lock, which means somebody decides to stay in a job that is not as fulfilling as they want it to be, it's not doing what they need for them, other than maybe providing the health care insurance that they need. I mean, that impacts the economy as well.
Exactly. And as a result, they become a less efficient employee, a less motivated employee, and their productivity goes down, so the productivity of the business suffers, and so you have a lower economic growth. So, I mean, we have been fortunate, particularly in District 17, because our unemployment rate is about 4.9%. Texas is about 5.5%, and then the nation 6.5%. So we've been lucky in Texas and even luckier in District 17, but this doesn't mean we're going to be immune to the impacts of Obamacare as it continues to hurt economic opportunity.
One of the things we were talking about this morning, two things for those companies that are close to 50 workers and those companies who can decide whether or not somebody's going to work more than the 39 hours that defines them as full-time. Yesterday, at least in reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, they point out that in fact, there doesn't seem to be any compelling evidence that part-time employment is going to increase because of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I think those statistics were incorrect. I mean, that was one group's analysis. But if you look at the preponderance of the analysis that's been done related to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, it shows just exactly the opposite, that employers are either they're adhering to that sort of magic 50-person limit. They're trying to stay below that. And I hear it anecdotally among our Texas 17 business constituents all the time, and that they are reducing hours by hiring more part-time workers and reducing the hours of what were formerly full-time workers. So most of the studies show otherwise compared to that Wall Street Journal report.
Okay, let's and today again, there's another catchphrase that came out of this yesterday, so we need to probably kind of get an explanation of that. The term is risk corridors because the CBO, when they came out with their revised projections, said that there are many people who want to repeal any kind of a temporary program that had been built in that had risk corridors. So what does that mean, and what's your feeling about that?
Well, essentially, when Congress was in a rush to pass this law back in 2009, 2010, again, that was before I was there, but the insurance companies were complaining to them that they said, look, we will participate in Obamacare, but you've got to protect us if you don't have the young people sign up the way you projected that they will. Because what the insurance companies were saying is that, okay, we'll go along with this experiment, but if we don't have enough young people, then we as insurance companies are going to lose our shirts by participating in Obamacare. And so you, the government, courtesy of the taxpayer, have to indemnify us for those potential losses. And so in Obamacare, they set up what are called risk corridors to basically cover the losses, 80% of the losses that insurance companies could potentially experience if you have a low number of young people sign up. Well, this is happening now. We're having a low number of young people sign up because the cost of Obamacare is so high, or the coverage under Obamacare is so high. And so we're getting in this death spiral where the insurance companies will drop out. So the only way to keep them in is to have the taxpayer indemnify them for the losses. I've got mixed emotions about this. On one hand, I don't think the insurance companies ought to pay the freight for bad government policy. But more importantly, I sure don't think the taxpayers should have to bear the freight because the insurance companies decided to go along with this ill-conceived law. So, there has been some talk about doing away with the risk corridors and tying that to a debt ceiling vote that will happen in the next week or two. I don't know where we're going to wind up on this in the House, but this whole risk corridor thing is going to become more topical over the next couple of weeks.
Well, that's why I wanted to broach it this morning, because we will be hearing some more about it. Well, then, real quickly, then, and finally, let's talk a little bit about what came out of the retreat where the Republican Party, I guess, decided to put together a blueprint. Tell me what you can share with that.
Well, just in general, I'd break it into two. When I look at 2014 moving forward, there's sort of two big strategies that need to be executed. One is sort of the blocking and tackling, or the governance agenda, the things that need to be passed so that the Congress and Washington are not disrupting the economy. And those are things like the debt ceiling, passing a budget, which is something we're required to do by law, passing our normal appropriations bills for fiscal 2015, which starts on October the 1st, and then our ongoing oversight activities like Benghazi, IRS, Fast and Furious, and so forth. So that's sort of the governance agenda. And then we have what I would call the opportunity agenda, and that's what sets us apart from the other side of the aisle. And those are how we focus on our strategy for jobs and the economy. They would include things like tax reform, a replacement for Obamacare, an overarching energy policy, and regulatory reform. Other things that could be included in that opportunity agenda would include immigration reform and budget process reform. Now, those are things that would pass the House. They will not go to the Senate. Well, let me rephrase that. They'll go to the Senate and Harry Reid will throw them in the trash can. Mm-hmm. So, but at least the American people can see what our opportunity agenda is in terms of the majority in the House. The governance activities will pass the House. They'll go over to the Senate, and they will become law. But at least going into the November elections, the American people would say, okay, this is what one side stands for, and this is what we stand for in terms of our opportunity agenda that we put on the foreign path.
Bill Flores joins us on Wednesdays, most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Obviously, it's about to get busy and a little more complicated as we delve into the CBO numbers, and we'll look forward to hearing about those the hearings and testimony today.
Yes, sir, and I'd ask everybody to watch the CBO hearing today because it will be a pretty fast, it'll be an eye-opening experience for the American people.
Certainly. Thanks for the time this morning.
Good talking to you, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue to pray for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
All right. Thank you, sir.